Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to One Up. We're finally back. Carl, how are you doing, my man?
Not too bad. It's definitely been longer than I might have anticipated, but we finally got back on to get a show recorded, so that's what matters. How about yourself?
I'm good. I've got the interesting's the wrong word, but the weird England game on in the background, which I imagine there'll be a bigger fallout afterwards with all the races and stuff. But yes, international break and all that jazz, the football's that shit. Me and Carl decided we'd do this, didn't we?
That's it, exactly. You know, you got to do something to pass the time when there's absolutely no Liverpool to discuss.
Absolutely. We make this promise every pod, but hopefully we'll be more regular from now on. But I think in the last one we did promise the next one would either be Final Fantasy VII or The Witcher. We lied, it's not going to be. we're gonna have a warm-up show before we get into one of them beloved titles whenever we do the next one. So, Carl, as we do, we always do start with the news, but just for what we're covering this one, we're going to talk about the upcoming titles that are coming out in pretty much before Christmas, but there's a few games there, and we're gonna go through them and probably talk about how weird Death Stranding looks for about half an hour. But Carl, the news: what is happening since we've been away?
Yeah, so we have three stories today, and the first one fitting for our show, our favorite topic, which is the Battle Royale genre, and particularly the king of that genre, Fortnite. Our first story: Fortnite leak appears to confirm new map and rebrand as Fortnite Chapter 2. And this one comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer, and Tom writes, Fortnite's next season will rebrand the game as Fortnite Chapter 2, a new leak suggests. And as expected, the game will be set across a shiny new map. This is all based on a leaked piece of artwork visible on the Italian version of the iOS App Store, reported by numerous fans on Twitter and Reddit. The image is our first glimpse at the game's new look. The artwork shows three of Fortnite's default characters in fresh clothing, staring out across a new landscape. There's a river with boats, the game's first aquatic vehicle, and new locations. But there are also a few things here which look familiar. The city area to the right of the image looks very Tilted-esque, and the pink patterns on the grass in the middle ground look a lot like those around the current map's monster skeleton. Fortnite fans have long been expecting a new map, and a previous leak pointed to 13 new named places coming as part of the next season. So is this a new map, a new island, or the same island resurfaced from a different timeline? You'll just have to watch Fortnite's The End live event this Sunday. It kicks off at 7 p.m. UK time. This way, this next live event is set up has pointed to things being very different this time around. Live events usually take place a day or two before the actual end of season, and afterwards play simply continues. Instead, this event is scheduled to directly precede the moment Epic switches its servers off, takes the game down, and patches in the following season's files and battle pass. And you can read the full story over in Eurogamer. Of course, that live event is actually going on, and I think you know, I haven't really been following it, but I gather that it's been running for hours upon hours since yesterday.
Yeah, it's still going now. It's literally just a picture of a black hole, seemingly. I have no idea what happened at the end of the last season, because I haven't played Fortnite. Ooh, God. Must be coming close to a year now, probably longer. People got too good at Fortnite. That's pretty much why I stopped playing that. But no, it's seemingly been going on. I'm just trying to... I'm worried that it'll end whilst we're on air, but it looks like it's still just in the black hole at the minute. But yeah, Fortnite 2, Chapter 2, whatever the hell. I don't know how popular it is anymore, because there was that bit where... There was that month where Apex Legends was the best one. Well, it really wasn't.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Probably the big question is, do you think battle royales are almost a fading thing? That was very badly put.
No, I certainly get where you're coming from. I think there's really two ways of looking at it. I think the trend is possibly dying out. You know, there was a time where it seems every week a new battle royale game was launching, and a lot of them were failing before they really got any kind of player base, because simply there just wasn't the players available to them. I mean, I remember Cliffy B, his studio, remember, brought out the, I think it was Radical. I'm going to have to Google that, but I remember, like, it literally the servers got cancelled before I ever... Radical Heights, that was it. It was kind of a very kind of neon kind of looking battle royale game, and kind of the game was only around for a few weeks before it was gone. And I remember there was another game we covered on the news one week where literally it was a sequel to another battle royale game, and like it came out and it was broken and barely anyone played it, and then they decided to pull the plug on it and just focus on patching the original game instead. And the original game had only come out about 6 months previous. Like, it was just crazy. The total oversaturation. And I think we've seen that slow down because people have realized there's a big player base for these games, but those players are generally loyal to what they play. You know, there was PUBG first. A lot of PUBG players then obviously transitioned over to Fortnite. Some then possibly... kind of the older audience may have since transitioned over to Apex Legends, but you kind of have Apex Legends as its audience now, and PUBG will still have its audience, and then Fortnite has, you know, the vast majority of the audience, especially that younger audience, and they're there to stay. They're not going to really move on to new games. So I think it's smart for these companies kind of maybe to stop focusing on Battle Royale and just kind of accept that they've probably been outgunned in that sense by Epic and focus on other things. But obviously, you know, Fortnite wasn't going to have the staying power forever. And although they released these new game modes and such, like the building, the creation mode and that kind of thing, probably was overdue a new map, so that this news makes sense. I mean, how many maps does PUBG have now? Is it 3, 4?
Russia, desert, ice, forest? I think it's 4.
4, yeah. So it makes a lot of sense that Fortnite would finally release something new. Now, I wonder if it'll replace the existing map, or if you'll get the choice of playing either or. Maybe they'll have like a classic mode to play in the old map and something else to play in the new map. But, you know, obviously we'll have to wait and see when this crazy live event finally ends. But I think it's a smart move on Epic, because, you know, nothing, you know, there's been games in the past and we've thought, oh, this is going to be huge forever. And then something comes along and usurps it, or people get bored or something on those lines. So I think it's a smart move from Epic to finally have something new in the works, even if by the sounds of it, it's not going to be a full departure from the previous map, but it seems it's going to freshen things up somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, it's probably overdue, if anything. I know they update the map with like blowing shit up in the actual seasons, but there's only so much you can do in that, and you can't really keep blowing up the same place and stuff like that. I might give it a go when it comes out, maybe once or twice, but ultimately I know Fortnite's going to piss me off, because you got the kids with the John Wick skin who can make a castle in 3 seconds, and I can't deal with that shit.
Yeah, no, it's funny you said that earlier about the difficulty, because I was at a friend's and his little nephew came in and was talking about Fortnite, and as my friend turned, I just said, Fortnite's too hard. Like, and he's a really good gamer. Like, this guy was once probably the best, if not one of the best Gears of War players in the British Isles, like between Ireland and the UK. Like, he was right up there on the leaderboards, and he finds Fortnite too hard. At least he can kill people. I can't kill people. I'm not sure I've ever killed anyone on Fortnite. Maybe like downed one or two people, but never killed someone. So that'll tell you, like, I'm just so bad at it. Because I liked Apex Legends when it came out, because I could actually get a few kills. But yeah, no, it's not really for me, Fortnite, but it can be a laugh if you get a few friends on. I can play a few games, but kind of then it reaches its limits, and then I'll have to go play something else. But like yourself, I'll be curious about this new map, so I'll probably pull a few friends on and mess around with it, especially because I'm sure inevitably, you know, as we start to do more regular shows, we'll be covering a lot of Fortnite again, because it'll be top of the gaming news as always.
To where we'll have to play it to get bullied by 10-year-olds.
It's what we do for the
podcast. People appreciate it. We play it so you don't have to. Next news story, bit sourer in the world of gaming. How about we explain this one? This will be a bit of a sensitive one, I suppose.
Yes, so we'll jump into the story and then give it a bit of a background. So Blizzard breaks silence on Hong Kong Hearthstone controversy, reduces punishment of banned player, and this comes from Nicole Carpenter over to Polygon. Blizzard Entertainment is shortening its suspension of Hearthstone player Blitzchung NGY to 6 months, Blizzard president J. Allen Brack announced tonight. The developer will no longer strip Chung of his earnings, and both fired casters will have their suspensions reduced to 6 months too. The Irvine-based developer has been under intense scrutiny, including internal criticism from staff, after it suspended Chung on October 8th for expressing support for ongoing protests in Hong Kong during a Hearthstone broadcast. Brack said in a statement that Chung broke the rules by using his interview to, quote, make a statement about the decision. He added that Chung's views were, quote, not a factor, end quote, in its decision. Quote, I want to be clear, our relationships in China had no influence on our decision, end quote, he wrote. He continued, quote, if this had been the opposing viewpoint delivered in the same divisive and deliberate way, we would have felt and acted the same, end quote. Here's an excerpt of Brack's statement. Quote, over the past few days, many players, casters, esports fans, and employees have expressed concerns about how we determine the penalties. We've had a chance to pause, to listen to our community, and to reflect on what we could have done better. In hindsight, our process was inadequate, and we reacted too quickly. We want to ensure that we maintain a safe and inclusive environment for all of our players, and that our rules and processes are clear. All of this in service of another important Blizzard value, play nice, play fair. In the tournament itself, Blitzchung, quote, played fair. We now believe he should receive his prizing. We understand that for some, this is not about the prize, and perhaps for others, it is disrespectful to even discuss it. That is not our intention, end quote. Chung's initial suspension came after winning a Hearthstone Grandmasters match against South Korean player Jang Don Hyun Jae on October 6th. In his post-game interview, Chung appeared on stream wearing a gas mask and shouted, quote, liberate Hong Kong, revolution of our time, end quote. The broadcast quickly cut away from the interview and Blizzard later pulled the video offline. On October 8th, it announced its decision to suspend Chung, strip him of his prize winnings, and to fire two Taiwanese casters that hosted the interview. Following the suspension, Chung told Polygon he knew there would be, quote, negative consequences, end quote, but that he wanted to, quote, contribute to the protest Hong Kong is having right now, end quote. Critics accused Blizzard of folding to Chinese interests, whether that's Chinese media company Tencent's 4.9% stake in Activision Blizzard, which is worth around $2.5 billion, according to the financial website The Motley Fool, or its desire to capitalize on the large Chinese gaming market. Multiple Hearthstone casters stepped down from their positions in solidarity with Chung, noting that the punishment was too harsh. A collegiate Hearthstone team from American University in Washington, D.C., held up a Free Hong Kong Boycott Blizz sign on an official broadcast. In the days following, Blizzard faced criticism from across the globe, as consumers posted pictures of themselves uninstalling Blizzard games and cancelling World of Warcraft subscriptions. Others took to Photoshop to turn Chinese Overwatch hero Mei into a symbol of the Hong Kong protests in an effort to get Blizzard banned in China. At the Blizzard campus in near Irvine, California, employees covered up plaques inscribed with the company's values, particularly, quote, think globally, end quote, and, quote, every voice matters, end quote, in protest of Blizzard's response. Brack addressed these company values in his message to the community, noting that Blizzard actions were, quote, causing people to question, end quote, if it was committed to its values. Brack said Blizzard, quote, absolutely is, quote, committed to its values. And you can read the full story over on Polygon. So obviously people are probably aware of the ongoings in Hong Kong and kind of the intensity of the protests there and the government reactions to it. And I mean, you know, it's going to be inevitable that people, particularly of kind of a Hong Kong background, are going to be kind of speaking out on that. And I mean, it seems Chung in this case just used the platform he has as an influencer and as a professional esports player to kind of make that statement. And obviously Blizzard's rules seem to kind of prevent that, or at least that's the angle they're taking. I mean, they initially banned them for a year and fired the two casters outright, which I'm still a bit baffled as to why the casters were punished at all. I mean, I know I didn't watch the interview. I didn't get a chance to. I don't know if you did, but
no.
I read that the casters seemed to like duck, you know, as if they knew it was coming, what he was going to do, so that it was kind of he'd cleared it with them beforehand. But regardless, I'm not really sure it's their place to tell him what he can or can't say in that sense, because it goes against free speech at the end of the day. I mean, for me, I don't know how a rule can kind of overrule the kind of human rights to free speech. I mean, what do you think, Guy?
Yeah, it's obviously a very difficult situation. I mean, you can see why they've banned him, but to make a political statement on that platform, they kind of, I suppose they've got the hands tied, but obviously with the volatile situation in Hong Kong, maybe you could have waited a bit. I'm not feeling sympathy for Blizzard or anything, because if what they say is true, that the hands are tied in terms of their protocols and stuff like that. But I mean, if anyone watches South Park, there's one of the new episodes is about breaking into the Chinese market, and that kind of covers it brilliantly. Like, South Park's kind of gone from random crap to pretty much political satire, hasn't it, in the later series, and it kind of covers it perfectly. But no, it's not a good look for Blizzard, because, I mean, I follow a few things on Overwatch, because I started playing that again, and it is seemingly putting people off, and that's not even with me like delving into like Reddit and stuff like that, where I imagine it'll turn it up to 11. So I think they've obviously just handled this quite poorly, which tends to happen more and more now. And I said the hands are tied, but you could have handled it a lot better. But I don't. Obviously, we don't want to get too political, but whatever's going on in Hong Kong, it's been going on for a while, and this is probably the biggest medium in Asia, I'd imagine, in terms of video games and stuff like that. So why wouldn't someone take that opportunity, use that to help, well, support the protesters or whatever? I mean, if someone else may have had a pro-China thing planned or whatever, but yeah, why wouldn't you use that stage? Because it is probably one of the biggest stages in that part of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, South Park did a great job of kind of covering the topic of kind of Chinese influences on kind of Western industry and on media in particular, and censorship and that kind of thing. And South Park ended up getting banned in China as a result, but it's nice that they've kind of taken that stand. I mean, for me, I'll always kind of have the point of view that peaceful protest should be allowed in all circumstances, and indeed that you know, that free speech should be allowed in all circumstances. So you know, I don't exactly agree with this. Now, I know some people might say that maybe not all the protesting has been peaceful, but then it's almost a chicken and an egg situation here. You know, who kind of acted kind of out of beyond their constraints first. But needless, I think clearly with some of the, we're not a political podcast, so we don't want to go too much into it, but let's say some boundaries have certainly been overstepped on the government side. I've probably ended up with, now I'm sorry, gags, AI will probably be banned in China now. You know, that's that mark I got for you. But yeah, no, I don't want to delve too much into it, jokes aside. But certainly, you know, my point of view, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of Guy or indeed the show as a whole, but would be that I would support Jung in speaking out. And I do think, regardless of whether it goes against Blizzard rules or not, they definitely acted too harshly. And, you know, I think why this is topical, you know, on another kind of side of things would be, you know, Blizzard's future. We had last year the awful showing at BlizzCon, where, you know, we thought we were going to get Diablo 4 and we just got this Diablo mobile game. And inevitably at the next BlizzCon we were expecting to get Diablo 4, but I wonder now how such an announcement would be taken now that Blizzard are being seen in such a negative light. And it's funny you mentioned going back to Overwatch. I had actually been, you know, was prepared to go back and start playing Overwatch again because I'd been talking about it to someone. But then when this news broke, it entirely put me off that idea because, you know, it would feel almost marred to be playing a Blizzard game at the moment. So, you know, softening the bans is one thing, but I think they need to go farther than this. I'm not sure kind of they've done enough here, really, for me. I don't know what you think on that in that sense.
No, they're obviously... God, I don't. You joke about it, but I don't want to get banned in China. God. It's not great, is it? That's the ultimate thing. You got a point out there. But anyway, we'll move on. Just watch that South Park episode. It's what I imagine we both think. On to actual more topical news for us too. PS5 is probably, it's not, I wouldn't say it's been released or announced, but we've been confirmed what we already knew, and it's coming out next year.
Yeah, so our final story, but obviously not the least impactful story, of course, would be Sony confirms PS5 is indeed called PS5, and it's out Christmas 2020. And this comes from Wesley Yin Poole over at Eurogamer. And Wesley writes, Sony has confirmed a few details about the PlayStation 5, including the fact it's called PlayStation 5. The company has also announced a Christmas 2020 release window for PS5. Quote, these updates may not be a huge surprise, but we wanted to confirm them for our PlayStation fans as we start to reveal additional details about our vision for the next generation, end quote, Sony said in a PlayStation blog post. There's a preview of the new controller that comes with the PS5 too. Two new features include haptic feedback to replace the rumble tech in the current DualShock. Quote, with haptics, you truly feel a broader range of feedback, so crashing into a wall in a race car feels much different than making a tackle on the ball field, end quote, Sony said. Quote, you can even get a sense for a variety of textures when running through fields of grass or plodding through mud, end quote. The controller has also got adaptive triggers incorporated into the trigger buttons L2 and R2. Quote, developers can program the resistance of the trigger so that you feel the tactile sensation of drawing a bow, an arrow, or accelerating an off-road vehicle through rocky terrain, end quote, Sony said. Quote, in combination with the haptics, this can produce a powerful experience that better simulates various actions. Game creators have started to receive early versions of the new controller, and we can't wait to see where their imagination goes with these new features at their disposal, end quote. Sony signed off its blog post by pointing to upcoming PS4 exclusives Death Stranding, The Last of Us 2, and Ghost of Tsushima. Will all three be cross-gen titles? And you can get the full story over on Eurogamer. So, yeah, as you indicated, guys, and as the story itself indicated, it's not really any surprise. We knew it was going to be coming holiday 2020. We knew it was most likely going to be called PlayStation 5 because Sony aren't as inventive with their names as Xbox and Nintendo tend to be. And, you know, a lot of these features, we probably had an idea were going to be in there. You know, that this doesn't sound too often to the HD rumble on the Switch. But, you know, it's kind of a thing. It'll be niche, but I'm not sure it's going to be the kind of thing that will sell consoles. I suppose what will sell consoles at the end of the day is the games. And, you know, I suppose maybe it being the best place to play The Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima and, to a lesser extent, Death Stranding.
We'll touch on that.
Talk about later. It will probably be somewhat of a reason when it comes to kind of the games. I mean, what do you think of this announcement or non-announcement?
It's what we knew. I don't fully understand the stuff about the controller, so it's probably best if you explain to me what a rumble strip is. That's whatever it was. But no, I mean, obviously people have their own favourites and stuff like that, but I think it's probably agreed upon that Xbox has a better controller. I know people like the DualShock 4, but if I remember correctly, isn't that because the DualShock 3 was fucking awful? I might be wrong in that, and Neil will probably shout. He won't listen to this anyway, but he'll probably shout at me if he ever heard this.
Yeah, I think the original DualShock 3 wasn't the best. And then, the DualShock 3 was good, but the 6-axis wasn't great in my experience. But the PS3 controller as a whole, it was okay. It was pretty much very similar to a PS2 controller, and then obviously a PS1 controller before it. But the Xbox 360 controller, like, destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Xbox One controller is even better than the Xbox 360. But the PS4 was definitely a massive improvement over the previous controllers, and I'm sure the PS5 controller will be again. But, you know, obviously, as things stand, Microsoft are the king of the controllers. So it will be interesting to see how Sony kind of tried to further combat that with this new controller. And, you know, as I said, this technology is neat. I mean, I know they did another kind of extended exclusive with Wired, just like they did when Mark Cerny did that interview a few months ago, where kind of the idea of a next generation Sony console was confirmed. And they did talk about the controller. And I think one example they gave was that, say, in a car racing game, if like you go off, like half your car goes off track and then the other half is on track, you're going to feel a difference in the feedback on the two sides of the controller.
Oh, yeah.
So that is one example. And of course, the other one is like the bow. So like, if you're pulling back an arrow and you're pulling on the trigger to do so, you know, you're going to feel that resistance, you know, in your finger to as you would probably get similar resistance in a bowstring when you're pulling it back. So, as I said, I think neat is the best adjective to describe this feature. It's for me personally, it's not going to sell me on games. And I don't speak for everyone, but I'd use the example of comparing it to the HD Rumble in the Switch. A lot of people thought that was neat, but I don't think it's really sold the Switch, and so much so that there's a lot of newer games for the Switch that aren't really making use of that.
What was that? Like, this shows how much I've used my Switch. What was that?
It's the same kind of thing as this. Like, you kind of, things that happen in game, you get kind of a feedback to it in the controller's rumble, but it goes beyond, you know. Obviously, back in the day when kind of rumble first became a thing, it was as simple as if your car crashed, the controller would shake, or if you got shot or something. And to be honest, it was just a nuisance to me, because it was just this violent shaking time,
vibration just, straight
exactly,
up.
Exactly. we've slowly seen kind of this technology evolve kind of generation to generation to where kind of the feedback makes sense for what's happening in game. And sometimes it goes beyond that. Obviously with the PS4, you had some kind of cool kind of audio features with the controller, like some in-game things would come out of the
did you find that like useful? Because I've only played on my PlayStation for 3 games, and the only thing I can think of, they used it in Horizon Zero Dawn, just when you open the map, and it was a bit annoying.
Yeah, I mean, like some games don't use it in kind of an effective way. I remember, like, for example, like Max Payne, that sticks out. Not Max Payne, sorry, Mad Max, because there's a game obviously that lasted about 50 hours that I played through completion, like, and there was just certain sounds in the game would come through the controller, and it just got annoying eventually, because it'd be like your controller so close to you and just these loud noises coming out of it. But I know there's a few games that, for example, like survival horror games, that use it kind of for jump scare reasons. And that's brilliant.
That would be going straight off.
I think you could do that similarly with, you know, kind of, it'd be even better if you're combining it with such a sensitive kind of rumble feature. Like, you can imagine if, like, you're playing a survival horror game and something grabs onto your arm or, like, onto your character, and you kind of get that feeling with the way the controller's moving. And, you know, it could be, as I said, I think it's a neat feature, and I think in certain games it could be really useful, but I just don't think it's going to sell a console. But at the same time, I don't think there's going to be this one killer feature in these consoles that's going to sell them, you know, because everything we're seeing with these consoles we've seen before. You know, you've got like the solid state drive for like faster loading, but obviously PC gamers will be telling you they've had that for the last 5 to 10 years. Similar, like ray tracing, there's like people with big PC rigs that likely have ray tracing in their like PCs that are capable of ray tracing already. So I don't think these features as a whole are going, like any one single feature will sell the console, but it's a combination of having them all together coupled with the games, you know, the killer apps that I think are going to move the PS5 and indeed the Xbox Scarlet, whenever we finally find out what that's actually called.
If it's actually called Xbox Scarlet, that's so shit.
Yeah, it's not a great name. But I think that's what we really need to wait for, those killer apps. And, you know, again, The Last of Us 2, Ghost of Tsushima, this would be the best place to play them, but you can still play them on PS4. So I think we really got to see those games that are exclusive to next gen and, you know, to the specific next gen consoles before the excitement will probably hit the wider gamer base, because I don't, as much as people talk about graphics and stuff, and again, it's not a massive jump in graphic fidelity to these consoles. I never think it's quite the selling point. It's always going to be that game, that the first game that comes out that makes people make that jump. I mean, will you be a day one adopter of the next gen consoles, or does that remain to be seen?
Oh no, no, I'll be an absolute little Xbox fanboy first day. I'm just going to call it Xbox 2, even though it's the fourth console, but we'll go with it. I think you're dead on. I don't think the features that they've talked about, I mean, the controllers do dictate, I suppose, but where you play, but like a lot of people went from PlayStation 2 to Xbox 360 and then Xbox 360 to PS4, didn't they? So maybe it's just me who's a little bit of a gimp about controllers and gets annoyed about the symmetrical joysticks and stuff. I mean, I played God of War and Spider-Man, all right? I mean, just maybe the thought of it that was putting me off, but I think maybe people are people have the favourite controller all the time, but maybe it's just less of an issue to most people now, because with the controller, I think you'd probably feel it more in a game like, I don't know, Call of Duty or even FIFA, where it's like something that you're so used to. Like, well, you obviously made that jump. Did you ever have an issue transitioning 360 to PlayStation or back to PlayStation?
No, not really. I think it was very strange when I went from 360 to PS3, because, you know, there was kind of a big difference there, and it was definitely the PS3 controller seemed inferior to it. And obviously, it had been a long time before I'd regularly played a PS2. I mean, I picked up my PS2 again the odd time to play like a JRPG or something like that, but it was rare. So kind of picking up that controller to play The Last of Us, which was kind of the reason I bought my PS3, it was a very strange experience. But I think then, because the PS4 was such a better controller, and also because I had that kind of moment with the PS3, kind of when I got my PS4 and was playing Destiny, it wasn't that strange to me. Like, even playing an FPS that I'd spent so many years playing on the 360. And then obviously when I switched back to the Xbox One and kind of when I picked that up again, it just didn't seem that strange. But I do admit that initial switch from playing the 360 all the time to playing the PS3, that was pretty unnerving to start. Like, it was very hard to get to grips with the controller.
Yeah, that's probably what I had at first. Like, I think it was Spider-Man I went first back to. And actually give it a try, because I kind of give up on Horizon Zero Dawn quite quickly. Yeah, Spider-Man, it was, once I got used to it, it was fine. But the first, you were like, why aren't you swinging, you prick? it was stuff like that. But no, I think people will have the favourite, but maybe it's less of a deciding factor anyway. But whilst we're on the topic, I mean, we've named a few games there that are, well, not launched for PS5, but will be available on PS5. We presume maybe Ghost of Tsushima will be the big launch title. Is the what do we expect the first deciding one to be? God of War 2? Or is there anything else I'm forgetting?
Yeah, so, I mean, we, in terms of, like, I don't think there's much confirmed yet beyond those games, but we do have kind of indications from what's been said by studios, as well as a kind of leaks, that it seems there is a God of War follow-up in development. There's also a Horizon Zero Dawn follow-up in development, and I'm not sure if it's been confirmed by anyone else yet, but I know Colin Moriarty, who'd have links to Naughty Dog and to the wider PlayStation world, indicated on his podcast Sacred Symbols that there was an Uncharted game in the works, but it's not being developed by Naughty Dog, and we don't know how early on that is, but I'm sure it'll come sometime in the PS5's life cycle.
Wasn't there a rumor, I don't know what, I can't remember what they're called, the people who make the Shadow of the Colossus, I think they're rumored to be making something? I may have read that wrong. I can't remember what they're called.
Blue Point, is
that's
it?
That's the one.
All the adaptations. Yeah. Yeah, there is. There's been rumors for a while that they're working on kind of an original game, but we haven't really seen anything on it as yet. And I don't even know, is it a PlayStation exclusive? I know they kind of have a bit of a partnership going with PlayStation, but I'll have a look there and see if there's anything. But for Ghost of Tsushima, I'm quite excited about it, and I have a lot of faith in the developer. But at the same time, generally, when it comes to exclusives for consoles, like, you know, launch exclusives, okay, Nintendo are a rule upon themselves. Obviously, they have a lot of prior kind of success with, you know, some of their biggest games tend to be launch exclusives. Mm-hmm. But with PlayStation and Xbox, I struggle for a launch exclusive that was a real system seller. I mean, like, you think of PlayStation 4, you had like Killzone Shadowfall was a knack. You know, neither of them were, like, Shadowfall was a solid game, but it wasn't a system seller. Xbox had like Rise. Woo! And
I loved Rise, even though it was a bit shit.
Yeah, I finished Rise. It's playable, it's short.
I was going to say, you finished it because it was 6 hours long.
I'm trying to think what else was an Xbox.
Oh, mate, let's not go down that path.
And then even you think back to the Xbox 360, there was like Project Dark Zero, and there was Cameo. There were decent games, but
the best one's probably Halo on the original Xbox. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, there's not much of it. Yeah, you're right, actually. You're on the button there. Yeah, it's an unannounced PlayStation 5 title, Blue Point, they're working on. So we'll wait and see what that is. But so it's weird with that point. As I said, I want to believe that Ghost of Tsushima will be a great game and a system seller, but then at the same time, just the past history of kind of launch exclusives not being system sellers kind of sticks in the back of your mind, so it's difficult to say. But
based on the games, for Halo 5.
I'm gonna say that for PlayStation anyway, that probably the first game I'd back as being a system seller that I'm expecting to come out early enough in the life cycle probably be Horizon Zero Dawn 2.
Yeah, that obviously won, I think that won Game of the Year, or was that one of the Zelda years? I can't really remember.
Zelda won that year, did but it? It got a lot of nominations. Yeah, it was up there. It was just unlucky that Mario and Zelda came in the same year. I know.
Yeah, then you had RDR and God of War the year after, or whatever. So, yeah, okay. Great. But anyway,
yeah, it's hard to choose.
Cyberpunk's winning next year, let's be honest. No. Last of Us is out. Fuck.
Yeah, it's going to be another year, though.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. But we'll obviously talk about launch. Well, it'll probably be E3 when we get more stuff, isn't it, about launch titles and stuff like that, I suppose. But yeah, shall we move on to our topic, Carl, of games coming out in the coming months?
Yeah, and the more immediate future, there's obviously some games to look forward to. It's not quite as stacked as the couple of years we've been talking about there, but I think that's good in a sense, because it lets you kind of focus in on what you really want to play instead of feeling you have to be pulled from one AAA title to another to the next. What's kind of, you know, I think maybe we should do this kind of chronologically and just kind of pick on the games kind of as they come over the next few months that interest us. I mean, what's first on your list, Guy?
Well, I'll start with the games that have kind of came out recently, because that probably make more sense. Gears came out the start of no start of, I think it was start of September.
Yeah.
So that I've not finished that yet, but it reminds me of a Gears game more than 4 did, which is obviously good. So I will finish that and hopefully report back. I've probably said that a million times on this podcast about various games. But yeah, Gears 5, very good. If you've got Game Pass, go play that. Borderlands came out, and it's Borderlands. It's very fun. The only problem with Borderlands is you get overpowered when you're playing with mates, and the end of the game is a piece of piss. Then we're on to FIFA and stuff, and we don't need to talk about that because it's FIFA and the gameplay is bad, but it's FIFA, so it's somewhat fun, if not annoying. But yeah, in terms of games coming out, we'll start in October. I mean, a couple are already out on, I'm using IGN's list. Ghost Recon Breakpoint's got really bad reviews. Destiny 2 Shadowkeep came out. People seem to like that, which will be interesting. But in terms of ones that are coming out, I mean, there's two games coming out on the same day in October, which is fucking annoying. But for me, the first one, I'll have to look because it's there alphabetically first. It's the next COD. I've played the beta. I didn't enjoy the beta. But the single player's got Captain Price. And I will turn into a little fanboy again.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually get around to playing the beta myself. I mean, what kind of didn't sit well with you when it came to the beta?
I think I used this anecdote or comparison before we started recording. If people remember when, I think it was Advanced Warfare that came out, and they kind of stole stuff from Titanfall and tried to make a futuristic game with wall riding and all that shit, and just didn't do it anywhere near as well as Titanfall did. In the beta, I got a very Battlefield knockoff feeling to it. Like, the interactive map, which is fine, but you've kind of got different loadouts, but you don't... The thing is, you've got loads of different loadouts and stuff. Like, this is the first time in ages on a COD game I've enjoyed sniping, but on a Battlefield game, if you've got a sniper class, you get different perks and shit that help you become a sniper. You've got medics where you can pick people up. On this, it's literally like, okay, this is ground war. There's a million people here. You've got no special abilities. Just go fucking run headfirst at each other and die. And it obviously has all the conquest stuff where you grab checkpoints and stuff like that. But without the characters and stuff, it just feels like a really rushed and unthought through knockoff of Battlefield, and I don't really enjoy it. And I don't know if it was just the maps they picked on the beta, because Ground War is its own entity now. Like, I think it was, I think it's 50-50. I'm not sure if that's actually right, but when I was doing the normal stuff, the team deathmatch and stuff, do you remember back in COD 4, 5, and 6, or Modern Warfare 1, World of War, however you say it, remember them? The maps were so unique.
Yeah.
And in the newer CODs, it's always the same free lane shite, isn't it? This was again free, like just the free lane formulaic map, and I just don't like that. It feels to me like a game, because obviously they've got their cycles where they get, I think it was 3 years to make a game now, wasn't it, between the three? Now it's gone back to two studios, so maybe people be a bit rushed more, but if they were the hand-picked maps, that's a bad sign for me, because surely you'd pick your best, what they'd perceive to be the best maps, and if they were the best maps, I don't think I'm going to enjoy online. Like, I'm an angry man, but that game brought, like, younger versions of me being an absolute little bitch boy. So yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, but the single player will be definitely fun. I think PlayStation are getting a year-long exclusive on one of the game modes, which doesn't sound too clever, so you know a new COD will be out next year. I'm very much looking forward to it, but I'm very cautious about the online. I'll give it a go, but if it just pisses me off, I'll just enjoy the campaign. I mean, I'm not paying for it, so happy days.
It's one way of looking at it. Yeah, that was it. An interesting point, actually, that Sony have an exclusive on one of the sub game modes of Spec Ops, until October of next year. And there was a bit of a backlash to that, and people calling for people to boycott COD. And I found that kind of funny, because it was like, I'd say Spec Ops is probably going to be the least played mode of all the modes, because it's kind of like the co-op kind of challenge type thing. I don't see as many people playing that. Like, let's be honest, the majority of people are going to play the multiplayer, and then there'll be people who play the single player, and then there'll be very few people who mess around with Spec Ops. It's not quite a zombie mode, but still, it's amusing nonetheless. I'm looking forward to COD as well. It was also the first game on my list, but I'm probably going to wait a while, because simply put, I won't really play the multiplayer. I'd probably try it for a day or two, mm-hmm. and then just bail on it. But I'm really excited about the single player, because, you know, I used to be someone who played through the campaign of every COD, but the ones that particularly interested me were the Infinity Ward ones. I loved Call of Duty 2. I loved Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, and Modern Warfare 3. I didn't play Ghosts, actually. It's been kind of on my to-do list.
Had a good campaign, though.
Yeah, so I must get around to that. But Modern Warfare 3 with Captain Price back, and what I've read about it, with the gritty feel they're going for, and the fact that, you know, it's going to be kind of step on boundaries a lot, and that kind of thing, that excites me, that interests me. So, you know, this would be one I'll definitely pick up eventually, and probably play through the campaign in a few days, as is always the way I like to approach the Call of Duty games in terms of their campaign. So I am looking forward to that one, but, you know, kind of the feedback on the multiplayer, which, you know, I've seen some negative kind of takes on it, isn't really going to bother me. It's mm-hmm. It's not going to affect my decision to buy this game or not, because the multiplayer is just kind of secondary to me. It's just kind of something to mess around with. So I suppose we'll see what the reviews are like, because they'll probably be dropping next week. So we'll get to see then.
Imagine they'll get the usual 9.5 from everyone. even though they've been pretty bad the last 8 years?
Just copy and paste review from last year.
This is COD Scrout Black Ops. There you go. Anything tickle your fancy in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so You mentioned that there's two games out that day, and I'm going to assume the other game interesting you is also the other game interesting me, and that would be The Outer Worlds from Obsidian.
No, Medieval.
Is it?
No.
Actually, yeah,
I did play that. I did play that on PlayStation back in the day.
Yeah, I enjoyed Medieval back in the day. That's Medieval, something I'll probably pick up when it's bargain bin for a few quid and mess around with it one day, just for that nostalgic feel of when I used to play it on my PlayStation 1. But yeah, no, The Outer Worlds. I mean, I've been waiting for this kind of game for a while, one of these games to really take my fancy. There's been a few that have come out, but they just haven't quite caught my interest. But I think the Outer Worlds will be the first one kind of since The Witcher 3, maybe, to really kind of catch me and drag me into it and make me stick that 100 hours into the game and spend 3 months playing it kind of thing. So I'm really excited about this because I love Obsidian as a developer. I mean, they specialize in RPGs, but they're very flexible when it comes to RPGs. You know, they've done stuff like South Park: The Stick of Truth and Fallout New Vegas, which obviously be a little bit more akin to what we're expecting from The Outer Worlds. So I'm just really excited to get my open world RPG kick out of The Outer Worlds and have that keep me going until Cyberpunk comes out. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, was it this E3 was announced or was it the last one? It was the last one, wasn't it?
Originally? I'll check that now.
I think it was the 2018, I mean, last one. I think it was. Unless it was the game of the year awards, but anyway, yeah. Since then, it's always been intriguing because obviously, for me personally, Microsoft buying Obsidian obviously turns up the interest a smidge because it's kind of an eye on the future, and obviously, this is Obsidian's last third party game, if that's the right way to describe it, and obviously. We get it on Game Pass day one, which is very good. And I think looking at the success it had with Gears 5, I think that was like the most played Xbox exclusive in years. And I imagine Game Pass is a big part of that. And if Outer Worlds can have, if they can have the similar effect on the Outer Worlds, fair enough. And yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think I've finished Fallout New Vegas, but it's probably my favourite Fallout game, which is strange to say. But it just felt like a very unique... I've only played three Fallout games, three, that one, played four. But no, New Vegas just felt a bit different, and it seemed to have Obsidian's own twist on it, which I liked. And if they can do that, I think we both got a Borderlands-y vibe off it, didn't we? I think we discussed it in the past. And if they can kind of have the chaotic madness of that in a controlled RPG element and make it a bit more story driven, that's interesting for me. I don't think it's multiplayer, which I hope will be a good thing. Which means it'll be more properly story driven. So hopefully that'll be a good thing. But yeah, I mean, we'll discuss it in a sec, actually, but with other games not coming out, I think this game will get more of a spotlight, and I'm quite looking forward to this, actually. I mean, it's probably fair to say I'll probably look forward to this more than COD. I'll probably play COD more because my mates will annoy me into playing it, but secretly I'll just be sat there scathing wanting to play this game.
Yeah, I mean... Strangely, what I really like about The Outer Worlds is that, you know, the talk that it's not going to be, it's an open world RPG, but it's not a massive open world RPG. Like, you're not talking Fallout, Skyrim, Witcher 3 especially size, which is probably a good thing because, you know, I love those kind of games. And when I was younger, I'd love nothing more than get my hand on one of those games because, you know, you couldn't get that many games. And the idea of this game could keep you going for months and hundreds, you know, a couple hundred hours play, be brilliant. But these days, you know, you know, we were already joking before the show about not having enough time to play all the games coming out. And, you know, so having this, if, you know, maybe if it's kind of a 50, 60 hour experience rather than a twice that kind of thing they usually expect from these kind of games, it's probably only going to be a good thing in my eyes if it's kind of a tighter, kind of well thought out experience, rather than having, you know, a lot of vastness that's empty. I mean, like the most recent game like this I played through was probably Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I loved it, but at the same time the world was way too big.
RDR,
I got
as
to
well.
The point where I just got lazy and didn't want to explore anymore. No, Red Dead was massive as well, but I think with Red Dead was a little more these diversity thinking to the world. But I think with Odyssey at times there was just a lot of empty space almost.
That's one of the games I promised to finish and did not, because I couldn't be asked.
Oh, it's so big. It's crazy big.
I think like my next mission's like in the bottom right corner. I'm just like, I can't be asked.
No, I don't blame you. It was a slog to finish it, to be honest. But I still enjoyed it. And I'm glad that's kind of the direction that Assassin's Creed is taking. But I wish it was just a little smaller, a little shorter, like a little more tighter.
Compact.
I think we could find a nice median between the 15-hour Assassin's Creed games and the 120-hour behemoth. You know, a nice 60, 70 hours maybe even. But I like the idea of the Outer Worlds being a bit more thought out and stuff. And I think that's what you kind of expect from Obsidian, because I don't think anything happens in an Obsidian world without an intention behind it. We've seen that with Fallout New Vegas and kind of how it was just the world felt more alive than in Fallout 3. Although overall I preferred Fallout 3, maybe because, you know, just maybe because it came first. I don't know, but just that's my own preference.
I was a bit older when I played Fallout New Vegas, so I probably appreciated it more.
Yeah, it's possibly the way you're looking at it. But I think you know what you're going to get with Obsidian is what I'm trying to say. And I think, you know, there'll be a lot of intention beside maybe I'm guessing maybe 60 hours. It could even be longer than that, just because it's not as long as a Fallout. But, you know, 60, 70, 80 hours, somewhere ballpark, you know, I think, you know, that I'm looking forward to spending those hours in this game.
If it's got replayability as well, because seemingly you can pick, well, as you mentioned, with any Obsidian games, there's obviously different paths you can take as a character. And I think that seems to be one of the selling points. There's different factions and stuff like that, and how you affect the world. So even if one playthrough is 30, 40 hours, you've obviously go do it again. So it should have a lot of shelf life, that. And as you mentioned, if you want that to get through to April, I think that's when Cyberpunk comes up, it could possibly do that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Just go back a couple of days for me. I might get WWE this year after not getting it a few years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I know you were discussing that recently in the group. I haven't played a WWE game since, God,
Raw vs. SmackDown.
I think it was WWE 2007.
Oh, God.
I think it was the first one on the Xbox 360. I think that's the last one I played. It literally has been that long.
Stop, to be fair.
Yeah. I know, I remember picking them up for my nephew for a few years because he got into them, but I never really played them myself. So it's been quite a while for me. So I wouldn't even, I think if I picked up a controller to play one, I'd be entirely lost. It's an interesting kind of strategy that you're saying, like, because you haven't had one in a while. I know a few people who do that with FIFA, for example. They only get FIFA like every 2 years. They don't get it every year. I've always been one to just get FIFA every year. But I suppose, like a lot of people argue, that sports games don't change enough year to year. So, and a wrestling game maybe even less so.
Yeah, no, it's a fair. I think when was the last one I got? It's probably 3 years since I got one. Maybe two. 2 or 3 years, I reckon. But no, I think with 2K getting it, the first few, like, I got them just to see what they were like. And it wasn't too different. So I'm hoping, obviously, 2K, very well-reviewed with NBA 2K and stuff like that in terms of actually putting a story in a sports game. Obviously, WWE, it should be easier to do story because the whole thing's a fucking story. So hopefully that they'll be able to do that. And I think it was Jukes who they split with, who obviously with THQ before it went to 2K. I'm not sure if this is the first one or the next one will be the first one, but I think either this one or the next one will be the first completely 2K game on its own. So hopefully they can properly put their own stamp on it. But I think that's all I have for October. But something that got postponed, which was definitely, I think it was October, is Doom Eternal. It was one of the show stealers for, probably not for us two, but for most people, Doom Eternal was one of the big show stealers from E3. But it's been put back to March, I believe, which not great, seeing as March and April's pretty damn stacked for games.
Yeah, that is true. And you've got, like, kind of around that time, you've got, like, Final Fantasy VII Remake. You've got
Watch Dogs.
Cyberpunk, Watch Dogs, and, of course, a little game called The Last of Us 2.
How do I keep forgetting about that?
I don't know how I'm going to find the time to play, because, I mean, I'd say Final Fantasy VII Remake, The Last of Us 2, and Cyberpunk are all kind of three of the games I've probably been most hyped about.
Some big ass games
in the past few years. And I did like the look of what we've seen Watch Dogs. I mean, we were both quite positive on that when we were discussing E3. So it's a strange time to launch a game. But at the same time, this is it. The granddaddies of the first person shooter genre, you know, Doom is the original game in the genre, or at least the original game in how we know them today. You know, it's the first game in terms of the reboot series was immense, and it was lauded as such by people loved it, people played it, people are gonna play this, I'm sure. So I think it's one of the few games that probably could launch in this stacked period and still find an audience because of the goodwill it kind of built up with its last release. So I wouldn't be worried for this game, but it's still, you know, I think had it launched in its original release date, it would probably be one of the major contenders for Game of the Year this year, because there's been some good games this year. But as we discussed earlier, there hasn't quite been the Red Dead, Spider-Man, God of War level games. Now, they might still come. You know, you've got, you know, the games we talked about, Modern Warfare, The Outer Worlds, and of course you have some other games we're going to talk to in a few moments, but it hasn't been as stacked a year as recent years. So I think Doom was probably one of my kind of blind favorites to be Game of the Year. So it's probably missed out on the big opportunity there in terms of the plaudits, because it's going to face up against The Last of Us 2 and Cyberpunk, to name just a couple, next year.
Yeah, it's probably not even going to be in the list. I think this year's kind of just showed next gen's around the corner. it'll be interesting. But Doom, it'll have its own cult following. But for people like you and me, it's not going to be on the list, is it? We're around that time. Like, I don't even have... I do have access to Final Fantasy VII, but I'd probably just wait till they're all out and then commit million hours to it. But yeah, it's. I don't think it's picked a good time to come out there. Anything else from October you are looking at?
Yeah, I have a couple of games releasing on October 29th. They're kind of collections of older games, but I'm looking forward to both. The first one is the what a title this is. Disney Classic Games, Aladdin and the Lion King. I'm sure everyone remembers playing Aladdin and the Lion King back on their Sega or Super Nintendo, if that was your...
It was Tarzan for me. What a fucking bastard of a game that was.
Tarzan. Yeah, I played that too. But these two games. I mean, I think everyone has those memories of kind of Disney games in their childhood. For some reason, now you mentioned Tarzan, reminds me of the Hercules game.
Oh, what a game. I had that as well.
These are great games. But like Aladdin and the Lion King, along with some other games like the Mickey Mouse games and such, kind of paved the way for all these kind of classic Disney games. And Aladdin for me is still probably, you know, one of the best platformers. The Sega version out there. The Nintendo version was okay, but the Sega version was like king. It was like one of the best platformers ever. And The Lion King was immense as well. So these are going to be two games that have been dying for a long time. Strangely, they've been two of my most like kind of requested games to get a re-release. You know, I've wanted them to appear on these Sega collections, but they never do. And obviously you think it's licensing. And then when Sega announced they were making this classic console, and they actually announced two Disney Mickey Mouse games that were on the Sega that were brilliant for it, I actually started to hope. And then they filled out the games and then have these two. And then out of nowhere, it was like, oh yeah, those two games are getting re-released in a collection. And I was just like, hype. Yes. I just cannot wait. I can't wait to sit down and die a million times because I can't play platformers anymore. But I'll do it. Just I'll go through that frustration just for these two games. So that's definitely on my radar, that collection. And then the other one is another collection. And it's also technically the first release, I believe, of Yakuza 4. On the PS4, but it's coming as part of the Yakuza Remastered Collection, which is a great deal. Anyone, like, I've always been interested in the Yakuza series because I love those kind of games, but I haven't quite delved in, and I've thought, like, it's kind of difficult to pick up the entire series because for a while, I think, like, was it Yakuza 2 was only on PS2, but it was like an 80 quid game or something to get it on PS2. It was very expensive because of a limited release. But this is combining, I think it's all six, in fact, seven, I think, Yakuza games all in the collection. You get like Yakuza 0, the remake of Yakuza 1, the remake of Yakuza 2, Yakuza 3, Yakuza 4, Yakuza 5, and Yakuza 6, I believe, all on one collection for like, you know, £50 or whatever. But it's like seven games. And some of these games like are available on their own on PS4, and they're going to set you back maybe 20 quid a piece or more. So this is a great kind of collection. It's a great deal. So I think I'm going to finally kind of take the plunge and pick it up. So I'm looking forward to finally delving into Yakuza. I don't know how many of them, even if maybe I'll complete like one of them, but it'll be worth it. It'll be worth it. But yeah, that kind of covers October for me. I think obviously Modern Warfare and the Outer Worlds are kind of dominating that month, or mm-hmm. at least the rest of this month.
I think so as well. So we'll move on to November. I don't think there's anything actually confirmed for December, but we'll do November and then we'll finish up. I'm not asked about this game anywhere in the slightest, but we do have to talk about it. What's Death Stranding about?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Guy. It's about walking. It's about babies. It's about rapey shadow monsters. And it's about celebrity cameos. You know, what else? What else do you need in a video game?
It looks like some futuristic bloke who works for Amazon. His mail route's a bit of a twat now. And he's got a baby for some reason. I don't know. You have to be some sort of diehard Kojima fan for this to be like. It looked beautiful, but what the fuck? he released that gameplay footage, and there was people cheering him taking a piss. What the fuck? I don't get it. What's the date today? We're like 3 weeks away from it, just about. Probably four weeks.
Yeah, it's three and a bit, yeah.
And this game's just confused. Like, I don't know when, what, reviews will be about 2 weeks away? This game must be very difficult.
Three, two or three, yeah.
Like, this game must be so difficult to review. Because what can you talk about? You have to have a certain level of expectations going into a game. And walking about after a game that's seemingly being made for about 800 years, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, I think you've played a lot more like Metal Gears and all that stuff with me. You know what I mean? Do you trust Kojima that much to make a game that isn't overly mental?
I'm intrigued. You know, like, similar to yourself, what I've seen of Death Stranding so far hasn't really kind of caught my interest. Like, it hasn't really excited me. It's weird, but it's weird on the next level. It's almost like leaving Konami is kind of unlocked Kojima. It's like we were only getting 40% Kojima with Metal Gear, and now we're getting 100% Kojima, and it's just off the wall. But I am intrigued to see what he does with those shackles off and away from the Metal Gear license. It's definitely a game I want to play, if nothing out of pure curiosity. And I will eventually get around to it, but it's not something I'm going to run out to play. I mean, as you said, I would have been a big, and I suppose I still am, as you know, a big Metal Gear fan, but at the same time, I haven't played a Metal Gear game in quite a while. I never really got around to 4. I left it on the long finger. I meant to play 5, and I still do, but I haven't gotten quite around to it. I played a bit of it, but I haven't really kind of completely delved into it, but I finished 1, 2, 3. 3 is probably one of my favorite games of all time. Peace Walker as well, so I definitely have a kind of in-depth experience with the series and with Kojima. But I just, you know, this game, it's just, I don't know what it is, but it's just, it's not quite gripped me. And I think what's striking is, you know, we're in a WhatsApp group with pile of gamers, and gamers were varying tastes. You know, we're not all kind of stuck to the same handful of games, and not one person in our group seems excited about Death Stranding. And you know, I don't think you could really say that about any other AAA title. I'm sure, like, if we mention The Outer Worlds, at least half the guys are going to be saying how they're looking forward to it and they're going to pick it up. And you know, there's going to be guys interested in Call of Duty and people interested in Pokemon, which we'll come to soon. But I don't think one, correct me if wrong, but are any of the guys looking forward to Death Stranding?
Not that I can think of. Like, I think we just laughed at it every time something news came out, haven't we, really?
Yeah, it's kind of been a running joke, really. And look, I know people are listening going, well, you don't speak for me, you don't speak for all the gamers. I know that, as you said, there are these diehard Kojima fans, and it's not just like a little sect of them. Like, he's got a massive following, and they're going to go out and buy this game day one, and they're going to love it because they love his insanity. And, you know, good for them. I'm glad they're getting this game. I'm glad that, you know, cause at one stage, we didn't know what was going to happen with Kojima. And so I'm glad they're getting more Kojima, and I'm glad they're getting a taste of what he does without Konami. So I'm excited for them. And as I said, I am intrigued by this. But, and like, I don't know, it could be a good game. I can't say it's going to be a bad game. It's not even out yet. But I am a person who is often intrigued by bad games. I sometimes buy bad games to play them because I hear they're bad. I mean,
the quiet man.
Exactly. And I had a great time with that because it was so bad.
It's when you know something's bad, it's like, I can just fucking enjoy this. It's like watching a shit film, isn't it?
I remember I picked up Duke Nukem Forever because
what a game by the
bad reviews, and I played through it all. I didn't think it was quite as bad as people made out, but it was
a Duke Nukem
great
game.
Yeah, but and I recently even picked up Aliens Colonial Marines on the Xbox 360 because I never got around to playing that at the time, and I seen it for a fiver on a site, and I was like, why not pick it up, play it for a bit, see why it's so bad. So, you know, again, I don't know if Death Stranding is going to be a game like that. I'm sure it won't be anywhere near in the league of those games. So, but I'm just making, I mean, curiosity and intrigue can kind of inspire you. You want them to play something as well as their general interest. So, I mean, all in all, obviously I'm going to reserve judgment in the game, but it's not one I'm going to be rushing out to get day one, but I'm definitely intrigued, as I said, to play it somewhere down the line.
And I will be interested for your take on that, because I'm not going to touch it with a fucking barge pole. there's a Need for Speed game coming out, apparently. I had no idea. Which one do you want to talk about first, Star Wars or Pokemon?
Let's go with Star Wars.
Mm. I'm quite looking forward to this one, because I like Respawn, and EA need a hit. Because Anthem was shit, and I paid for that. There's a Need for Speed game, as I said. I didn't know it was coming out, so they've probably obviously put all their eggs in the Star Wars basket. Obviously, the loot box scandal still, right, from the previous Star Wars game, still looming over. This needs to be a hit. And what they've shown, but got a caveat this, EA have a history of showing us fake shit to make stuff look good, i.e. Anthem. So this is hopefully a changing of the guard for EA, because this needs to be good, and I like Respawn too much for it to be shit.
Yeah, no, you're right there. I mean, this kind of has to be good. Even just thinking about the Star Wars license, EA haven't really hit the ground running with it. You know, the Battlefront games haven't quite worked out. You know, the last one obviously even tried to do a campaign, but it ended up being like a 5-hour mess. It's another thing I've been meaning to play, in terms of bad games. But, it's if anyone's going to do it right, it's going to be Respawn. I mean, as you said, that you're kind of fan of theirs. You're kind of a big, fan of Titanfall and go as far as suggesting it's the best Xbox One exclusive.
Oh, God, I
am. And you wouldn't be the only one who thinks that. So, I mean, they're consistent. You know, Respawn Titanfall 1 was a solid game. Titanfall 2 was a solid game.
Excellent.
I mean,
a
lot of people say Titanfall 2 is one of the best first-person shooter campaigns in a long time. And then Apex Legends, as you know, we were talking about it earlier, is a really solid shooter. So, I mean, now, okay, all these games have something in common. They're all first-person shooters. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is not a first-person shooter. So it's kind of a departure for them there. But at the same time, they're real and a really experienced studio. You know, not just as Respawn, but obviously a lot of them came from Infinity Ward in the first place. So, you know, they've been around the block. They know games and they know what works. So I've got a lot of confidence in them, and I like what I've seen from Fallen Order. You know, the gameplay we've seen around E3, you know, there was an extended gameplay. Like, it looks really cool in terms of getting to play as a Jedi and flip about the place and do all these different force moves. And what else do you want in a Star Wars game? And the fact it looks quite open-ended, where you can kind of travel back and forth between planets. And I think there's, they've said there's Metroidvania kind of features where, like, there might be a place you can't reach when you first go to the planet, but then you go to a later planet and get a new force power, and then you go back to that planet and you get up there and you might get, like, kind of upgrades and materials and whatever else and find some cool stuff. So I very much like what I've heard. So I'm very excited about this game, and I'm hemming and hawing about picking it up day one. I think if it wasn't launching beside the next game
we're
going to discuss,
that's the thing there, isn't it?
I definitely would pick it up day one. So I don't know whether I might wait a few weeks, maybe even get it for Christmas or something. I don't know. But it's definitely, you know, I think I'm strangely confident. I know I shouldn't be confident in an EA game and a Star Wars game in particular, given the recent history. But I just, you know, I have full faith in Respawn, just as I think you clearly do.
Yeah, and the thing is, if this is a success, I don't know how this works, But if this is a hit, and obviously, as you mentioned, they're very experienced with first person, but if this is the success of their third first person go at things, and it is a success, there's a lot of EA IP that is not getting used well at the minute, i.e. Mass Effect. Like, I don't know how much of a stranglehold BioWare want on that, but we obviously know they're working on Dragon Age. If Respawn needs something to do after Star Wars, you see where I'm going? Maybe that's not how it works, but if this is a success, I imagine it opens more doors and a different variable amount of games Respawn can actually work on.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I mean, one series, obviously, we know people are big fans of and would like to see you make a return would be Dead Space. Ooh. I mean, could we possibly see Respawn take a go at Dead Space? You know, you can't really rule it out, because it seems like Respawn want to be kind of creative and kind of flex their
army of
their muscles and try to. You never know.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I don't think you can quite kind of rule out any possibility for Respawn if this game is a hit. And I think you could also wonder if we could possibly see, or if we will likely see, a follow-up to this game, like a sequel, if it is a hit, because we know EA likes a sequel. So
true.
It'll be interesting to see kind of what this opens up in terms of kind of the future of Respawn and indeed the EA stable as a whole. I know for a long time, BioWare have been quite interested in doing a new KOTOR game, but EA turned them down. But maybe they could change their mind on that if this game is a hit, which for me personally would be very exciting.
I mean, the whole point of getting a Star Wars license is to do Knights of the Old Republic. Stop turning people down. I know BioWare is not the same anymore. But just thought it, you bastards. But yeah, I think we've talked on the license quite a lot, especially with how Marvel have seemingly not done, or Disney haven't made the same mistakes with Marvel. But yeah, anyway, we'll move on from Star Wars. We're optimistic, but we are aware it's here. Unless there's anything else in, is there anything else in November before we talk about the big one?
There's one game after the big one, but I'll just briefly mention it. That's on my radar, but I'm almost reluctant to talk about it because something tells me it'll probably be delayed again and be delayed till 2020. Which is the long, 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 long awaited Shenmue 3, which is supposed to launch on November 19th. But as I said, I just don't have faith in this game coming out in this calendar year. But if it does come out, I'll be interested to see what finally comes about as a result of this game. And, the people who've been literally dying for this game since they played the first two back on the Dreamcast. Yeah, the actual Dreamcast, the Sega Dreamcast. So, this one's been long, long, long in the tooth. So it will be interesting to see. I mean, it's ambitious, as you would expect from a Shenmue game. And, I mean, it was a trendsetter for a lot of things. It kind of inspired a lot of game features and a lot of series that have come since it, and it's been such a long wait. So I think there'll be high expectations on this one, maybe high expectations that I can't possibly hope to ever live up to, but nonetheless, it's obviously going to try, and I do hope I'm wrong and that it does come out on November 19th and people finally get the game they've been waiting literally well over a decade. Well, in fact, nearly two decades. Yeah, pretty sure, like 20 years. So hopefully it finally comes out. And I hope it is good at the end of the day, because, you don't want people to be. It's nothing worse when these games take forever to come out and then they flop and are quickly forgotten about. So hopefully it's a hit, and I'm going to give it a try at some point.
Look, fair dues. We're nearly up to an hour and a half, but we do have to talk about Pokemon. Of course, it's fucking Pokemon. We got a little taster with Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. But is this what we've been really waiting for? The whole point I've got to switch is this fucking game, let's be honest.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people have picked up their Switches literally for this. And a friend of mine only got his recently. He bought it off a work colleague. And it's literally sat in the case that he got it in. He still hasn't played it. And he's just literally like, yeah, I'm waiting till Pokemon comes out and then I'll just get Pokemon and play Pokemon, you know? It literally is. It's the system seller to end all system sellers, really. I get Pokemon every year and I'll usually kind of jump into them, play maybe a few hours, but then, you know, just get, it's not that I lose interest, I just kind of get sidetracked and I haven't finished one for a long time, but something tells me this one is going to be the one that I'm going to get like full kind of 110% into and kind of spend hours upon hours in and kind of catch everything and win everything. And, you know, as you do with Pokemon, as you would have done all those years ago when you were a kid. I know there's, you know, as you said, is this what we've been waiting for? And I know like some people when kind of it was first announced were disappointed and were thinking it wasn't quite the kind of full on next gen Pokemon they were expecting. But personally, that doesn't bother me. I didn't really have those expectations. I think Pokemon is what it is. You know, just kind of give me more stuff to do. Maybe make it a little bit more open ended. And I think that's what they've done here. That's the impression I'm getting from this. And, you know, it ticks all the boxes for what I wanted from a new Pokemon game. And I couldn't be more excited, if I'm honest. I mean, it's literally a month from tomorrow. I mean, we'll literally have this game in our hands in like a month. And that's crazy.
Now it's going to last forever, that fucking month. God damn it. I've no idea which one I'm going to buy. We still don't know the proper difference other than just two big ass dogs that are different in it. But yeah, this is the whole reason I've got a Switch. Like, I enjoyed Pokemon. I had Eevee. I enjoyed it, but it felt like a hors d'oeuvre. It felt like a mini starter. Whereas now this for me is going to be the main course. Like they could just release a game that they call it Sword and Shield, but if it was just Pokemon Red, I'd fucking still go buy it. That's how much I've been waiting for a proper Pokemon game. I'm looking forward to this game so much. And the only bad thing is it's on the same day as fucking Star Wars. So I'm going to have to multitask somehow with handheld Switch and Star Wars on the TV. It's going to be interesting. But I could probably get Star Wars at like midnight and try and complete it in the time it gets till Switch gets delivered. I'll deal with it. But it's not ideal. That's all the games. I mean, obviously Black Friday is in November as well, so there'll be a few games I'm picking up on that. NBA and WWE to name two. But we'll talk about Black Friday once we get there, I imagine, because there will be deals on. But Carl, anything else you want to bring up before we go? Like, we just brushed over Just Dance. What the fuck are we?
Oh yeah, no, that'll be a day one purchase for the Switch, you know. I think we've kind of, as we said, it's not the most stacked fall when you compare to kind of previous years. I mean, of course, there are other games coming out, you know. We clearly, I mean, everyone knows that without us having to say that, but you know, I don't think there's a it's not quite compared to kind of the last mm-hmm. couple of years, which were especially last fall, which was just crazy. It was literally like a massive game launching every week. But I kind of think it's nice when this happens, especially when you have a game like Pokemon and indeed the Outer Worlds, can be these more in-depth games, because you can really dive into them and give them kind of the time they deserve. I mean, one thing obviously launching in the fall is Stadia. I'm sure we'll kind of be giving that some coverage on the pod, and be interesting to see how it goes, really. That's the main thing. But I mean, that's a topic probably for later in the year. But
every game touched by Stadia is cursed. They were showing Doom, Breakpoint, and Destiny. Like, Destiny's not cursed, but the other two were cursed. sorry, I interrupted you there, making a shit joke.
No. That was pretty much the point I was making. It was just that it's kind of, I like kind of when you have these quieter mm-hmm. kind of fall periods, kind of where you can just focus on a few games, maybe play a bit of your backlog, that kind of thing.
You actually have money for Christmas.
Yeah, that too.
It's definitely a quieter fall. I think there's a few games that I haven't got dates, but there's not really anything. I mean, Ancestors of the Humankind Odyssey, if you want to play as a monkey, that game's coming out some point this year, apparently. But yeah, that's the only one that doesn't really have a date. I mean, Battletoads will probably be 2020. But yeah, we'll finish up there then. Just above 1 hour and a half, an hour and a half, but we haven't been here in a while. Fuck it, making the promise, we'll do Witcher next time. Of course, 10 out of 10. But yeah, thank you, Carl, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.